Hey, it's Michelle Beadle. That's right, the Michelle Beadle. You're welcome. You love talking about sports. I love talking about sports. You know the only thing cooler than talking about sports? Sports! And right now, all your favorite sports are on SiriusXM. I'm talking every NFL game, every game from the NBA, NHL, MLB, every NASCAR race, golf major, major conference college sports, and all the top games in the WNBA. If it gets your heart pumping, it's on SiriusXM. To start your free trial of SiriusXM today, visit SiriusXM.com/believe.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Sports Ethos Fantasy MLB Today podcast. As per every Wednesday, I am Nathan Baker. Of course, had Anthony yesterday. We'll have Paul later. And really a team of guys that goes towards putting all of our baseball content out, which, of course, is in full swing right about now. And we'll be tilting up as we approach the trade deadline. Of course, we'll have pieces for the trade deadline specifically. We've got a collaborative all-star related piece that I know Anthony in particular has been working very hard on and is expected to be out in the not-so-distant future. So obviously check that out. And we've got the beginning of the basketball and football pre-season or pre-drafts, mock drafts out. And obviously... basketball division always does a tremendous job, but not as many people give love to the football guys, and they do just as great of a job over there. So for somebody who's looked at Sporthesos for basketball content but maybe not ventured into what we've got to offer for football, definitely check them out. Of course, remember to follow us at Ethos Fantasy BB. That's at Ethos Fantasy BB on Twitter. You can follow myself at NBaker NGB. That's at NBaker NGB. And I answer questions, tweet about fantasy baseball, sometimes not fantasy baseball, sometimes soccer, whatever else. But we'll give my take on various trades and, more pertinently, talk about any streamers that I'm unable to talk about today, as there, per usual, are some starters that have not been announced. So today we'll talk about the streamers for today's slate of games. We'll talk about the streamers for tomorrow, per usual. I want to talk a little bit about some of the all-star selection process, some of the snubs, some of the ways that certain guys have potentially been put in at the expense of others due to representation rules or other factors that I'll get into later. But something I want to know from you guys, and I was thinking about this earlier, the Derby format, of course, has changed again, and it's been with great regularity. Of course, when I was growing up, it was the 10 outs. Every swing that did not result in a home run was an out. And that was a blast to watch, although it did admittedly take forever to get through. But it was fun. You could watch every home run in its entirety. Of course, then they went to the hectic time format, which was also fun. The ratings still did well. I enjoyed it. But of course, you don't get to quite admire every shot to the same degree, and at least it feels like the home runs aren't quite as far, which makes sense. You know, at the end of the day, if you have 4 minutes or 3 minutes that hit as many homers as possible, you're really not trying to hit any of them 5 or 50 feet, and those are the ones that are really entertaining. But the big one for me, at least, and I like the kind of medium of, I think there's got to be some level of time so it doesn't take forever. But I like the fact that they've put a max pitch limit to potentially encourage people to take their time a little bit more, swing harder. I just want to see the guys with the largest degree of raw power participate. And funnily enough, we just saw Reese Hines make his major league debut a couple of days ago. He would be up with those. But it's the Stantons of the world, the Schwarbers, the guys that kind of swing as hard as they can that maybe aren't the most prolific home run hitters, but when they hit them, it's just different off the bat. Even the guys with the cool bat flip, like John Singleton. Get John Singleton to the home run derby. I know Paul Anthony will be on board with that, but it's one of those guys that every time he hits a home run, I feel inclined to go look up the home run just to watch the bat flip. It's always worth it for the bat flip. And in the case of the Stanton, it's worth it just to see how badly he annihilated that baseball. And of course, you know, you got the sweet swingers too. And my favorite ever was Carlos Gonzalez. Of course, a lot of people love Robbie Cano, but for me, Carlos Gonzalez, underrated player, but fantastic swing. Fantastic swing. In my opinion, the most attractive ever. But of course, before we dive into the streamers, I want to thank BetOnline for sponsoring this episode, per usual. BetOnline is your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season. From baseball, golf, soccer, right to all of the top fights in UFC, MMA, and boxing. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to our online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker, or unwind with one of our over 150 slot games. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Use promo code BLEAV, that's promo code BLEAV, for your 50% free bet credit on your first deposit up to $250. Bet online, the game starts here. So, to get into the streamers that Anthony recommended yesterday, he had three full goes, so to speak, those being Reese Olson against the Guardians, Tobias Myers against the Pirates, and Carson Spires against the Rockies. His two yellow flags were Drew Thorpe against the Minnesota Twins and Alec Marsh against the Cardinals. I agree with both of them being yellow flag, although I would note that Marsh has some blow-up potential, as much as he might have potential to do quite well. So, obviously be careful with that one, which he mentioned as well. And then his three fades were a 2-1 game, Michael Lorenzen against the Angels and Griffin Canning against the Rangers. His idea with Lorenzen was that he has very poor peripherals relative to his stats. Now, I would guess that given the condition the Angels are in with their injuries, that this is not the outing that Lorenzen blows up. It will happen. We saw it happen even last year with there were some regression late season. There's got to be regression with Lorenzen. I'm just not convinced it's immediate. I don't blame fade here. I could totally see as Anthony predicted, both starters getting knocked out early. Canning, Lorenzen against the Angels, Canning against the Rangers. And the last one was Luis Severino against the Nationals. A great piece of work here for Anthony, too, because, of course, it's one of those offenses that everybody thinks, they're kind of crap. Well, they're not, Washington, especially against righties. And you've got to consider, you know, just even when you look at it from an individual basis, obviously you have C.J. Abrams, who funnily enough does have reverse splits as a left-handed hitter. But James Wood and Luis Garcia are two significant threats in that lineup. Not even to mention Jesse Winker. Garcia and Winker don't even play against left-handers. So that's the kind of thing that is a total night and day for that lineup. Garcia's been hot. Winker's been great all year, really. And obviously James Wood, I think. Put it this way, I would not be surprised if James Wood hits one to the moon against Luis Severino. Even as a Met fan, you can put that as my prediction. James Wood is unfortunately going yard. One thing I did want to mention about Sevy is his start last outing was not as bad as the line looks. He left the game with six innings and four earned runs and the bases loaded. And unfortunately, Jake Diekman coughed it up yet again, gave up a grand slam immediately upon entering the game to Brian Reynolds, and it all went downhill from there. But Severino against the Nats being the last of his fades. So we'll go more into depth on the streamers today. I've got four streamers, three yellow flags, and two fades, although a couple of them are kind of on the border of streamer slash yellow flag and yellow flag slash fades, but I'll elaborate as I always do. Tough for me to categorize them specifically. But of course, per usual, all of these are 65% owned or less in Yahoo leagues. To my knowledge, all of them are significantly less owned in the ESPN league. So if you're an ESPN player, you should have no problem getting even the best of these starters. But the first one who I'd prioritize in any format, and these are in order of how much I like them, is Shane Boz against the Yankees. The matchup here is fine. The Yankees have not been as good as people would have thought offensively, although Soto's in a bit of a funk. Judge hasn't been Aaron Judge for the last week. Of course, Ben Rice has been fantastic, and the Yankees still have some offensive threat, although it's not really, as of late, been a great offensive team. And for me, this is mostly about Shane Boz. He had, before his injury in 22, elite strikeout totals. He has great stuff, electric stuff. He showed that stuff in AAA. His ERA, hit an ERA under 2 for his last, I want to say, 8 starts in AAA. It could be 10, 8 to 10 starts in AAA. Boss made one start so far, and I think should be rostered in basically all formats. So, obviously, as a stream, but this is he's about like 60% owned on Yahoo, significantly less than ESPN. He should be picked up regardless. He can strike out enough people that he should be on rosters, period, and held. The next streamer I'll have is David Peterson against the Nationals. Now, I did just talk about how Anthony did a great job researching and, of course, identifying that the Nationals have a sneakily good offense, but most of that is against right-handed pitching for much of the reasons that I did detail about the way that their lineup flips over. Of course, they don't have Joey Meneses anymore. It's Juan Yepes now, but they've got a few rotating pieces that play against lefties that don't play against righties, and those players are worse. And that lineup is significantly different, with James Wood hitting further down in the order, with potentially Luis Garcia not starting, but Jesse Winker almost certainly not starting. So Peterson, you know, the walks can be an issue at times, but he should limit the runs. He usually doesn't get tagged for many. He gets ground balls. It's a good matchup for him. I think he can go 6 innings in this one. Maybe you look 6 innings, a couple runs, maybe a couple walks, but should get his fair share of strikeouts. So I like David Peterson. I think he works, honestly, in 8-team leagues, but 10s and 12s, certainly. Mackenzie Gore against the Mets. Of course, same matchup. I don't like the matchup for Gore as much as I like the matchup for Peterson, but I like Gore more than I like Peterson. So I feel like I talk about Gore all the time as a streamer. It's puzzling he's not owned more, but he's had some ups and downs. He's a great pitcher with great peripherals. He has inconsistency with his command, so he's never that efficient. So I wouldn't expect anything more than 6 innings. You'd be probably expecting like a 5-inning, maybe 5-plus inning exchange. He did strike out 10 against 5 2/3 against the Mets, and ended up, Dylan Floro gave up his inherited runner after he left the game. I think it's a good enough matchup for Gore, and not a great matchup, but I think for the strikeout to walk ratio for the, especially that K potential, I'm fine. 10 team leagues, I think is good for him. The next one so those are my three solid, you know, I don't think you can really go wrong with any of those three. Aaron Civale against the Pirates is a lower priority stream. Maybe you could put him in yellow flag, but I'd prefer him to those who I did put in yellow flag. And he's facing the Pirates, as I mentioned, with Milwaukee, of course, after the trade from Tampa Bay. His numbers are not great. He did strike out 8 last time, although he gave up a decent chunk of runs. Although he's faced good teams in his recent matchups, and the Pirates are not a good team. Offensively, at least, great pitching. Doesn't affect, of course, the stream might affect the probability for a win, but I think the matchup works really well with his breaking stuff, with the Pirates' propensity to chase. He can walk guys at times, but the Pirates have a lot of guys who expand the strike zone. There's a couple tough at-bats here. I mean, Rowdy Tellez has been hot, O'Neill Cruz has been hot, and Brian Reynolds has been hot. outside of that, they've not got a ton for the rest of their lineup. Next guy you probably look at is Nick Gonzalez. So I'm fine with Civale in 12-team leagues, maybe 14 or is fine. Certainly 14 is fine. I think 12s are fine as well. But I wouldn't necessarily get your hopes up too high for anything crazy. The next I'm going to mention is Austin Gomber against the Reds. This is not from the British burner account. For those that don't know, there is a burner account that is almost certainly that of the Colorado Rockies former president who talks about, loves talking about Austin Gomber and how great trading away Nolan Arenado was. Nonetheless, Gomber's pitching really well lately. I like Gomber as a pitcher. It's an iffy matchup. And this is why I'd say 14-team leagues is what you want to be looking at for Gomber or more. And that's why I say it's yellow flag. It's really not a great matchup. But he's been pitching very well recently. The matchup against Cincinnati, if it were in Colorado, I'd almost feel more comfortable. But Great American Ballpark is tough. They do have some righties that have been hitting well. He's had last start, he won 7. That's where I'm putting it as a yellow flag. The next yellow flag and last pure yellow flag is Albert Suarez against the Cubs. This is another 14-team leaguer. His strikeout totals have been mediocre, but he's been reasonably consistent with his runs and innings pitched. The Cubs, I don't think it's a bad matchup, and that's why I'm mentioning this. If I didn't like the matchup, this would be a fade, or this could be not. But again, it's one of those where Gomber, okay, I like the pitcher. Suarez, I like the matchup more. Might I potentially edge with Suarez to be safer? I think so, just because I think the Reds have the ability to light up Gomber. I don't think the Cubs are particularly likely to light up Suarez. That'll be it in terms of yellow flags. Now, I have Jordan Hicks on the edge of that yellow flag threshold. And the reason I have him on the edge and not straight in phase is that he's pitching at home against a team that has not swung the bat that well recently. Now, they've been hitting righties better than lefties, and this is where I would kind of put him as a fade. But if you wanted to take his ratios are bad. This is the problem. And in category leagues, you definitely avoid him. 100%. It's a pure fade. If you want to take a chance at a 14-plus team point league, I don't mind it if the other guys aren't available, just because it's kind of a safe-ish start and that he keeps the ball on the ground. It shouldn't give him multiple home runs. But I would be surprised if we got anything spectacular against Toronto from Jordan Hicks. I have two fades. One of whom who is a 100% slam dunk fade. And that slam dunk fade is Rodery Munoz against the Houston Astros. This is an easy one. He's actually had some good starts since he's been put back in the rotation. And even against some good teams, I would ignore it all. He's outside of not great starts, but his strikeout to walk ratio is terrible. It's a really bad matchup against the Astros, both in terms of stuff shape. Pitchers against Astros have really hammered right-handers with similar stuff to Rodery Munoz. I don't think the upside's there either. I mean, he hasn't gone 6 innings in a while. He's had less than 5 inning outings with regularity. This, for me, is like I don't understand why anyone would do this. The only reason I'm even mentioning him as a fade is that he's had some successes in the past, in the not-so-distant past, so don't be fooled by that. This is not one to touch at all. The other one is Luis Medina against the Red Sox, and I like Luis Medina a lot. It's a weird match. He has heavy reverse splits and is likely to face a lot of hitters hitting from the left side of the plate, which could benefit him almost enough to make me think about putting him in yellow flag. But the blow-up potential is just too big for me. Especially with the Red Sox team that's been swinging the bats really well, especially relatively to what they were doing. Obviously, a team that's been carried by their pitching a lot. Especially with some of those guys. I mean, Devers especially. I don't know if you guys have seen that pitch that he hit out against the Yankees. That was like a foot and a half outside. you know, and Devers, of course, is a notorious bad ball hitter. But those kind of instances are what make you look at that facing the Red Sox off and say, well, he might not even do anything wrong; it could still blow up. The fact that he has reverse splits is the one saving grace. It's, in my opinion, one worth avoiding. To summarize, my streamers in order of preference would be Shane Boss against the Yankees, who I recommend as a one to keep, but obviously to stream for now. And then, unless he explodes against the Yankees, keep. David Peterson against the Nats, Mackenzie Gore against the Mets, and then going down to the next tier, Aaron Civale against the Pirates, Austin Gomber against the Reds, and Albert Suarez against the Cubs. And then kind of down to the next tier, Jordan Hicks against the Blue Jays, Luis Medina against the Red Sox, and the straight 100% fade, 1,000% fade is Roger Munoz against the Astros. If you were going to stream Munoz against the Astros and I convince you not to, and he does well, you can come yell at me. I apologize. I'd be very surprised if that. But nonetheless, so the one thing that this kind of ties into talking about a couple of these Mets that and of course, funnily enough, talking about Albert Suarez, although Suarez himself was never going to be an All-Star, and a couple of the Orioles, is related to the current system of selecting All-Stars. And you're going to see this from Anthony's really the collaborative article managed by Anthony Paul. Andre, I know, of course, always has a part, a tremendous organized, far better than myself, organizationally, and all of the other baseball guys are contributing to that. But in terms of the actual MLB All-Stars, the material MLB All-Stars, we obviously always have some snubs. Anthony Santander, Brandon Nimmo, Jordan Westberg, Francisco Lindor, Christian Walker, just to name a few. There were some pitchers. Jake Irvin got snubbed. There's quite a few guys, probably, that I'm forgetting at the moment that would have deserved to get in and did not. But obviously the pitchers are what they are. The hitters, especially in the National League, which is what I want to talk about, have kind of created an interesting conundrum as it relates to Nimmo, Lindor, and Christian Walker specifically. Now, Pete Alonso got into the All-Star game this year. He's gotten into the All-Star game every year since he's come to the big leagues in 2019. He's probably deserved it every year prior to this year. But this season has an OPS just under 800. He's taken a step backwards defensively. A guy who came up with a poor defensive reputation, who's worked hard and actually become a very good defensive first baseman. That's really gone by the wayside this year. Of course, Christian Walker, Gold Glover over there, has been great again. And his home run totals are good. His, you know, even the counting stat totals are good. But he's not been Alonso, and he's not been better than Christian Walker, and he's not been at an all-star level. He's been good. Just good. Many were surprised, including myself, to see, well, Pete Alonso selected over Christian Walker. Interesting. No Christian Walker, especially with the tear he's been on lately. And, of course, some of that could be due to proximity of voting. But that goes to, okay, well, you know, obviously the Mets had to have a representative. And somehow, Brandon Nimmo, who might be the best outfielder of the National League, and that's not really an exaggeration. I mean, if you want to look at weighted runs created plus, you want to look at F4, in fact, he actually has the second best win probability added. This is Brandon Nimmo has the second best win probability added of any player in baseball this year. And it's quite a big jump to number three as well. But when you look at Nimmo and Lindor and you say, okay, well, they didn't get in. Maybe Nimmo may be a bit more confusing. Lindor, you can say, okay, well, Trey Turner, perhaps undeservedly got voted in. He's down to bring Ellie De La Cruz, and then C.J. Abrams was potentially the most fitting rep from the Nationals. So that's three shortstops right there, and, you know, fair enough to those. You can't leave Ellie at home. Trey Turner was voted in, so can't do anything about that. And of course, Abrams, you know, the Nats need a rep. That's where, okay, why is Pete Alonso the best rep? Why him and not Nimmo? Or even, you know, finagling some stuff around and taking a fourth shortstop, taking the door. There's a couple theories here that I hold, and they are to some degree conspiracy, and to some degree not. The first being that Pete in the past had said, a couple of years ago, said that he would do the Home Run Derby again, provided he's in the All-Star game. He said, it's not worth it for him to do the Home Run Derby if he's not in the All-Star game, which I guess makes enough sense. You know, he's not going to go all the way there and prepare for it just to go do the Derby and then go right back home. If he's not selected for the All-Star game, he's not going to be there anyway. Might as well rest up. The Derby, of course, had Gunnar Henderson announced early. He was a great addition. Alec Bohm was a bit of a curious one. Of course, now Alonzo's in, a couple other questionable-ish choices. I mean, I think everybody's happy to see Bobby Witt. Of course, Ozuna, given the character issues and his poor off-the-field track record, was surprising. But there was some thought that Alonzo was selected to the All-Star game so he would do the Home Run Derby. Because, of course, he'll bring eyes to the Derby. You know, a lot of people love to watch him. A lot of people love to hate him. Nonetheless, he's a huge part of this event. He takes it seriously, which is fantastic for baseball. We need more guys that want to do the Derby, that take it seriously. You know, that's what prevents it from being the NFL or NBA All-Star festivities that have lessened in importance significantly. But the other thought that I had was, well, a lot of these guys that got snubbed, particularly Nimmo and Lindor, I mean, those guys are both locked up to long-term contracts. Pete is having his worst year of his career. Not a terrible year, but his worst year of his career, undeniably, this year. He is in his late 20s. He is a large-bodied, power-hitting first baseman with deteriorating plate discipline. The kind of player who, if you were to look at projections, generally projects very poorly over a long term. And of course, there's a special player. He has the most home runs of any player in the league since he started in 2019. He's on pace for 500 plus homers at least. Yeah, we're talking about a guy who, just on counting stats, forget about WAR, could be one of those has to get in the hall on counting stats. But putting that aside, when you consider his representation, Scott Boras, you consider the hype around him, his status as a free agent, and maybe the pressure on him currently as a free agent, especially given the lack of success with Boras clients over the last free agency period. It makes you wonder whether there's some players voting in Pete Alonso because they want to see Alonso get paid. It's a landmark contract for a player who is historically good at the beginning of his career, but also projects quite poorly. You know, can he get $180 million? Can he get $200 million? Can he get $220 million? I mean, Scott Boras will tell you that he deserves to get paid like the $300 million guys because he is a transcendent talent the same way that the $300 million players are transcendent talents. Now, Pete Alonso is not going to get $300 million from anybody. That type of player, that sort of player is not worth it, you know, even if you compare it to the Freeman contract or the Olsen contract, even if you want to compare it to the Pujols contract, and of course, he may be at everything other than hitting the baseball out of the ballpark, he's not Albert Pujols. That is a fascinating thought that maybe the players, and I couldn't blame them necessarily for that, but by allowing the players to have sovereignty in a player vote, would vote for an impending free agent that could set the market, like Pete Alonso, with, of course, the biggest agent in baseball, for that purpose, to try and help his case. To, you know, say, okay, he's been an all-star every year of his career. It certainly helps with the optics of, okay, what if he wasn't an all-star? Well, you've got his declining numbers, you've got his declining chase rate, you've got his declining exit velocities, you've got everything declining, you've got his declining hard hit rate, his barrel rate's declining, his home runs are declining, his overall production's declining. Well, you know, teams don't want to sign a declining asset, let alone one who can only play one position, to a 10-year, 12-year deal, the way it was rumored. At that point, Yeah, that's where you're talking about 1 or 2 years. Now, the Pete Alonso is in his 20s. He's not a dinosaur. But it is a very interesting thought to think, okay, is this Derby related? Is this just, you know, reputation related, that, you know, Pete Alonso is Pete Alonso and he gets respect as a result of the name value and that thus he's in? Or is it, you know, financially related? It's something to think about for the future, particularly given the chain reaction that it's caused Christian Walker, who deserves to be in the All-Star game, unequivocally. Francisco Lindor, who unequivocally deserves to be in the All-Star game. And Brandon Nimmo, who truthfully deserves to be starting the All-Star game. Nonetheless, is not. And that's the way it's gone. So, obviously, there's some winners from that. It gives some opportunities to C.J. Abrams and you know, just like Teoscar Hernandez, who I think deserves to be an All-Star nonetheless. Jackson Merrill's, I think, as well. But, food for thought, nonetheless. And potentially something that I'll write about in the future as we get closer to the deadline. But I'd like to focus more on the trade aspects regardless. But hey, if you got any theories about that, certainly hit me up on Twitter at NBakerNGB. You can even go to our Ethos account as we release some of our own All-Star Game content. And we'll have predictions. We'll have prospect discussions. We'll talk about busts and successes. We'll talk about guys who we expect to have good second halves. Really excited for what's coming out over the next week and especially over the next month. For those that weren't on the Ethos beat last year, we had a tremendous amount of content around the trade deadline, grading every single trade deadline from every single team. And I painstakingly, as someone who spends way too much time watching minor league baseball, went through and graded out every single prospect that was returned in a trade. Now, thankfully, we have some tremendous baseball minds who are going to kind of divvy up this responsibility to get them out quicker and, you know, make me want to rip my hair out a little bit less. But of course, I had a great time doing it last year, although it was exhausting, and I'm very excited to get started again. Hopefully, talking about more in my New York Mets in a more positive light. But you know, I'm used to the pain at this point. I've become desensitized almost. But anyway, I want to thank everyone for listening yet again. I want to thank all of the other Ethos content creators as well for putting out a tremendous volume of content and tremendous quality of content for all of our Ethos subscribers go ahead and enjoy. And of course, check all of that out through the Sports Ethos Twitter page. And obviously, the website is formatted well, even if it's to peruse in sports that you wouldn't maybe otherwise wouldn't. Don't forget to follow at Ethos Fantasy Baseball. And I want to thank BetOnline for sponsoring this episode per usual.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.